And we're back. Hi, I'm Maggie Linton. Kim Alexander is out today. Our next guest has co-authored a book titled Echo Literate. Lisa Bennett is Director of Communications for the Center for Echo Literacy, and she, along with Daniel Goldman and Zenobia Barlow, have compiled a number of stories to make all of us more aware of the most pressing ecological issues facing our planet today. Their goal is to make everyone, young and old, more aware about what can be done to make our planet the best it can be, with emphasis on young people. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
We're so glad you could join us. I have to tell you, your book was surprising. I loved all the different stories, but let's talk about what Echo Literacy is and
sure.
your organization and how it formed, because I think that'll help move people in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's a great question. Thank you. So the Center for Eco Literacy is an organization that's focused on education for sustainable living. So we interact with teachers, we provide resources and training to help the nation's teachers integrate an ecological perspective into their teaching and learning.
And with that, your book is so much more than just good for teachers. It's good for people in general, and you make it interesting by starting out just right from the very beginning, talking about making kids more aware just through the classroom.
Yes, and I'm glad to hear that it appeals to more than teachers. It's one of the things that we did have in mind, and the focus is on telling eight inspiring stories of community leaders, educators, and young people across the country who are really creatively addressing some of these important ecological issues. And, you know, I emphasize the inspiring and creatively addressing it, because so often what we hear about these issues just makes people depressed. And there are a lot of folks out there who are thinking about really fantastic ways to address the important issues related to food and water and energy, and it becomes quite motivating when you see them, and it was really an honor to be exposed to some of these people. One of the ideas that we focus on getting across in the book, Eco Literate, is that, you know, there is kind of a, you know, we jokingly refer to it as the secret sauce for effectively educating and inspiring people about these important issues, and that is through connecting emotional, social, and ecological intelligence. One of my co-authors, Daniel Goldman, wrote the seminal books Emotional Intelligence and Social Intelligence, and in this one, we're linking it to ecological intelligence, and our finding is that it really leads to something effective.
You tell also about how so many things were formed. You talk, one of the most interesting stories I found in here was the story of oil in Alaska. And it can be found basically through three stories and how the pipeline, the prospect of drilling. And we keep hearing stories about trying to go back to Alaska to extract even more. And that's not always a good idea.
No, it's not. And I traveled to Alaska to visit with some of the people there and understand what their experiences are. And, you know, that is one of the big themes of this book as well, is that, you know, you have to have some kind of a connection in order to really care. And, you know, I don't think any of us believe that people actually don't care about these issues. They do care. It's a matter of being exposed to it. And in the case of Alaska, there's a woman named Sarah James who lives in a very, very small indigenous village called the Arctic Village. It's right above the Arctic Circle. And she has dedicated, the last several decades of her life to trying to educate other people about what drilling for oil would do to people who live there. And one of the big impacts is that they're a community that are still very dependent upon the caribou. And, you know, these great herds of caribou pass through every year. They have a very respectful relationship to them. They are dependent upon them. They hunt them, but only during certain times of year. They limit it. But what the drilling would do is it would disrupt the birthing ground for the caribou. So the very place that they need to go to give birth is the place that would be disrupted if they were drilling in the Arctic National Refuge. And that clearly would have tremendous repercussions for the people who live there. But it goes beyond that. I think it's more of a symbol of how interconnected we are to all living things in our natural world. And that's one of the things that the story attempts to get across, is that, you know, we have something to learn from the people who are experiencing this.
Right. And greed and our overabundance of need for oil. And, you know, again, going back to that first story about how many people don't realize that even most of the plastic bags and things like that that we use every day are done through petroleum products.
That's right. That's right. That first story, I have to say, was a story of something that happened in my own son's classroom, where the teacher, you know, set these young kids up to build, to create, rather, an ocean habitat. And they spent months doing this and, you know, designing out of art forms all these different creatures and learning about the ecosystems and presenting to all the other kids throughout this kindergarten through eighth grade school, presenting it to parents. And then she created a situation that was a kind of a mock reenactment of what happens when there is an oil spill in the ocean. And, you know, worked very, very gently with the children to help them understand that and then to help them process going through what people have to do to try to clean it up. But it, you know, strikes very deeply when you have that kind of education that, you know, kids feel deep down. And that's when I think we see that real change happens.
Once again, we're talking with Lisa Bennett. She is Director of Communications for the Center for Eco-Literacy, and she, along with Daniel Goldman and Zenobia Barlow, have compiled a number of stories, and that all is part of Eco-Literate. You talk about a school in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Also, once again, the power. We use a lot of coal and are destroying a lot of land to keep electricity going.
Yes. And this was a story about a teacher in Spartanburg, South Carolina, who was interested in, you know, how to try to help young people have a sense of civic engagement, civic responsibility. I think that's something that a lot of people think about. And what he decided was that he wanted to have them have a real deep understanding of their particular connection to energy. And, you know, these are kids in a pretty comfortable community, and they, however, relied on coal that came from eastern Kentucky. Now, they didn't really have any idea that they relied on coal from eastern Kentucky because they didn't see it. So what he did was he took them on a field trip. And they traveled and they followed the train line, that the coal train line that went right to where the coal came from, and they saw how it was acquired and what happened to the community and to the people as a result of the practices there for mining for coal, which is through mountaintop removal coal mining. So, you know, they learned from people who live there about what it's like to have the top of a mountain blasted off and have that pushed into the waterways nearby. And they saw it. And, you know, they came back changed, and they came back motivated and ended up educating their own community and kind of keeping that going.
We hear so much about also the city of New Orleans, which has been ravaged by storms as well as floods. And now, just a few years ago, the BP spill. The Kids Rethink New Orleans Schools was a very heart-wrenching and yet uplifting story.
Yes, these are amazing young people who are led by some amazing, or guided, I should say, by some amazing adults. It's a group that started after Hurricane Katrina, and they needed to leave New Orleans, of course, with most of the people who lived there at the time. But they got placed in other schools around the region, and really had kind of a wake-up experience because many of those schools were much, much better than the schools that they came from. So when they returned to New Orleans, they got engaged in helping rebuild New Orleans schools with, you know, with some of the students' ideas. And they became very empowered, and they were very respected, and many of their ideas were adopted along the way. And then, as you mentioned, about 5 years into that, the BP oil spill happened. And what the kids did was they really got involved. They're very focused on, you know, it's interesting, one of the people who teaches them the phrase is, you know, no whining. You don't look at these issues and complain about it because nobody wants to listen to you then. So you have to come up with solutions. And what they did was they tried to grapple with, well, what, you know, who's responsible for this? What can we do? And what they did, they had a mock trial. And they decided that the people who they thought were really responsible for it, it wasn't just about pointing fingers to, you know, business or government. They felt that the American people were part of this as consumers. And so they then set a goal for themselves to work on trying to reduce their own schools' dependency on oil.
And we hear about the carbon footprint, and they really brought it in. And also their sustainability with their food, thinking locally and getting the food from those areas. And that also goes out through California and many other parts of the country, making kids aware that they don't need all the junk food. They need to think locally for even healthier food.
That's right. That's right. There's another story that's set in Oakland, California, and it's about the school superintendent, Tony Smith, who is really taking this very seriously and recognizes that food, you know, also has such a big impact on students' ability to learn. And so they're engaged in, you know, looking at really rethinking food, and the Center for Eco-Literacy is very, very deeply involved, actually, on site in helping them with that work.
As you, what do you do as far as, you should explain what you all do to help enlighten teachers and to help get programs going, because I'm very much a person who believes that there should be more solar power, water, hydropower, things along those lines, and not constantly going in and digging up the earth and that kind of thing. So
yes. So what we do is we, you know, we recognize that there really have been for a number of years now a growing number of people, you know, that share the sentiment you just expressed, and there are a growing number of people who share, you know, a commitment to help kids think of better ways. And we know that when you expose young people to some of these challenges, they have such fresh minds, you know, that they really very often can come up with better ways and with solutions. And, you know, because there are these so many teachers who want to be engaged in that, it's a pretty rewarding kind of endeavor. What we do is we offer, you know, seminars, we offer trainings for teachers. We have a very rich website, ecoliteracy.org, that provides lots of downloadable resources for educators to use. I think it is also of interest to family members and people who are just interested in sustainable living. And then we you know, present books such as the new one, Eco-Literate, which attempts to provide, you know, ideas and inspiration.
You talk about sustainability all throughout, and people can kind of stop where they are right now and really, really think how they are sustaining or destroying. And there's a stark difference between the two.
Yes, and, you know, sustainability becomes one of those kind of complex words. It's taken on so many different meanings. And, you know, one of the ways in which we think about it is, you know, it's a recognition of something very basic, right, that our well-being depends upon the well-being of the natural environment, and that we ourselves are a part of that environment. And so we're all connected, and, you know, that's very much at the root of what we think about when we think about sustainable living. In fact, we present 5 eco-literate practices in the book, and one of them is embracing sustainability as a community practice. You know, it's recognizing directly that we are all in this together. You know, we are as people in this together. We are in our natural environment, all connected. And so the more we can do to help each other and young people in particular understand and care about that, you know, the more solutions we'll come up with.
All right, I'm going to leave it at that. It is Lisa Bennett. She, along with Daniel Goldman and Zenobia Barlow, are from the Center of Eco-Literacy, and their new book is Eco-Literate, How Educators Are Cultivating Emotional, Social, and Ecological Intelligence. A very readable book, I have to say. Applaud you all for that. And thanks. Once again, their website is ecoliteracy.org. Once again, that's ecoliteracy.org. Thanks also to Nona Minifield Cheeks. She is director of the Innovative Partnerships Office at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. You can reach her through email at nona.k.cheeks@nasa.gov. And it was great chatting with Sarah Ferguson, Duchess of York. Look for her new book, Ballerina Rosie, wherever books are sold, including Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. Her website is sarahfergusonfoundation.org. Once again, that's sarahfergusonfoundation.org. And out today is Winter of the World by Ken Follett. His website, ken-follett.com, features 10 different covers for Winter of the World in multiple languages, and also a map of where the lead characters are located with audio excerpts from the novel. And once again, 10 different covers of Winter of the World. It is so cool to see. And Ken also invites people to share their own World War II stories and post them on his website and Facebook page. His Facebook page again is Ken Follett Author. And that's, again, Ken Follett Author. That's on Facebook. Very cool. You'll love it. Next time on Cover to Cover, we'll talk with a woman who knows how to get results through social media. Kristen Lamb is the author of We Are Not Alone, The Writer's Guide to Social Media. Even if you're not an author, you can learn how to maneuver through the social media maze. And we'd like to add that On Demand is up and running here at SiriusXM. You can find out more by going to SiriusXM.com. You can download to your smartphone or your tablet, and it's pretty cool. In fact, you can find Cover to Cover as well as a number of other shows, both music as well as talk, all throughout. And we'd also like to add that Book Radio has been preempted a lot over the past few weeks, and it will continue through mid to late October. And hopefully then preemptions will be done for a while. Bandwidth goes to sports, and it's not something we have anything to do with. And finally, we heard you. Late night and mid-morning, we know about the graphic material in Law's Justice. Please know that it will not be done again. And continue to have a good day and evening. Many thanks to our producer, Ashley Latimer, and good luck on your move up in the company. Thanks to all of you out there, and we'll talk with you next time.
You've been listening to Cover Live with Maggie Linton and Kim Alexander, Sirius XM Book Radio.